You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking National League East with MLB.com's East, NL East beat reporters. We'll be talking about Melvin Upton and the competition for a lot of pitcher spots in Braves camp. We'll be talking about Giancarlo Stanton and the attitude around the Marlins. We'll be talking a lot of Matt Harvey when we talk Mets. We'll be talking about a whole bunch of Phillies who might or might not be traded. And we'll be talking about a whole lot of different things out of Nationals camp, including Ryan Zimmerman's transition to first base. I'm Matthew Leach. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Washington Nationals with MLB.com's Nationals beat reporter, Bill Ladson. Bill, it's Matt Williams' second spring. And it seems like a lot of times you learn a lot from year one to year two of doing anything. I know it's early, but are you seeing any differences in how Matt Williams carries himself and how he runs a camp? Anything at all to tip you off that this is year two and not year one?
Not really, Matthew. I mean, the guy's working hard. I mean, he's expressing to his team that he wants to get better defensively. He wants to be more consistent offensively. And he knows the score. I mean, he wants to go all the way to the World Series this time. And to be honest with you, I think he's the same guy. I mean, I guess he goes to outings, fishing trips, and all that. But to me, he's still the same guy.
What's the – I mean, again, I know it's early. I know it's the first week of camp, and these kind of conclusions are difficult to draw. But everybody in the world is basically saying this may be the only great team, that everybody else has some strengths, have some weaknesses, and people look at this club and see a potentially dominant team. Again, I know it's really early, but do you see that weighing on guys? Do you see that motivating them? How do you see that those – I know there have been high expectations for a while, but the expectations this year are really high for this club. How do you see guys kind of responding to that?
They're responding very well. I know that, Matt Williams has been asked a lot, how does it feel to have a dominant rotation? And, you know, I saw this the other day. He was getting a little agitated because he kept saying you have to play the games. And he's absolutely right. And, Matthew, there's no question that the Nationals have dominant pitching. There's no question about it. But I tell you, I question the offense. And to me, I think that's the key to them going all the way, because we saw what happened in the playoffs against the Giants, where it was non-existent. So hopefully, and that's Matt Williams' biggest concern right now, is the offense. And he hopes he can stay consistent all year long. Yeah, I mean, it did well last year, but not to the point where he was satisfied, and it showed during the playoffs.
One of the real key parts of that offense, if it goes as well as it should, is Ryan Zimmerman. I know we've talked about him some in recent weeks, but what does it look like when you see him working out at first base? And I know he's been a good infielder, so theoretically it shouldn't be that difficult. But how is that process going? How is he coming along with that transition?
It's going well, Matthew. He's been doing it every morning around 9 o'clock or so. And then, the thing is, though, he's not afraid to take advice from Matt Williams and Rick Shue. Those are the guys who are really working with him on the position. And, yes, he played 5 games last year, but he knows he's not perfect. So, and he knows he's replacing a guy who is really good in Adam LaRoche. So he knows that he has a lot of work to do, and he probably, won't perfect the position until probably in the spring training.
One interesting name in Nats camp this year is Dan Uggla, a guy who's had some really rough times, but not that long ago was a very good player. Mm-hmm. There's some notion that maybe he was compromised by some physical issues over the past couple of years. What are you seeing? Again, I know it's really early. What are you seeing from Uggla, and is he a guy who's maybe got an opportunity to kind of be a important part of this team?
It could be. I mean, it depends. I mean, the way Matt Williams was talking the other day, which was kind of surprising, it seemed like second base is up for grabs. So, I mean, we have to see what Espinosa, Uggla, and, Escobar, what they do during the season. But, you asked me about Uggla. You know, based on what I've seen so far, his batting practices, that's all I've seen. I mean, he's taking some sweet swings. So, hitting the ball out, it looks impressive. But you hope that translates into the exhibition season. So we'll see what happens.
What has he said about those vision issues or head issues that seem to maybe coincide with his struggles at the plate the past couple of years?
Well, he insists he has some game left in him, and he just feels that the concussions played a role is having like three straight bad years. So, you know, and the fortunate thing for him, he's really relaxed here because he knows Matt Williams. He knows, Mike Rizzo since their days in Arizona. So he's very comfortable. And, I hope for his sake that, he can be productive.
One of the few actual questions about this team is how the bullpen is going to set up before the ninth inning. The ninth looks like it's pretty set in stone, but how mm-hmm. they're going to get there is a question. What from talking to people and from looking around, again, I realize no actual competition is taking place, but just from talking to people and looking around camp, how do you think that is shaping up?
Well, I think it's pretty much shaped up, to be honest with you. I mean, you have Casey Jansen. You have Aaron Barrett. I think those guys are going to be given every chance to be the late inning guys. There's no question about it. I mean, Craig Stammen could get in there too, but I don't see it. I see him as, one of the long guys. And I think if Aaron Barrett, I think he has recovered from what he did in the playoffs. I think he can recover nicely, and him and Jansen could be a nice setup team for Drew Storen.
How does Tanner Roark fit into that?
You know, it's too early to tell, Matthew, because, Matt Williams announced recently that he's going to be a starter right now. So, as the season goes on, we'll see if he's going to be a short man, a long man. I have to guess that they're going to treat him like a starter all year long and treat him like a long man because, you got to think about injuries. If something happens to one of the five starters, you can automatically put Roark in. So we'll see what happens.
So in camp at least, he'll essentially work out as the sixth starter. Is that correct?
That's correct. That is correct, Matthew. He's taking it well. He knows the score. He knows the five guys. Who the five guys are. So he's ready to become a bullpen guy.
We've talked about this some, but he's such an interesting figure because he was so good in relief and so good as a starter. To some extent, it seems almost a waste to use him as a mop-up guy. I mean, will there be, and I'm not talking about external pressure, will there be internal pressure? Will there just be some sort of urgency to make sure that this guy isn't wasted pitching the fourth inning of a 7-1 game?
I'm sure they've learned a lesson by how they handled Ross Detweiler. So I hope that they'll find a way to put him in games. I mean, with Detweiler, it took a while for Detweiler to enter games. So I think they'll find a way to put Roark in meaningful games to the point where he won't be wasted, as you put it. So I think he'll be fine. I'll tell you, he's not Detweiler in any way. He won't mope or complain or anything like that. He is not Detweiler in any way.
From just, again, these first few days, talking to people, is there anybody you've been given kind of a heads up to keep an eye on that might be a surprise either among prospects or among fringe guys?
Well, the guy I'm keeping my eye on is, Michael Taylor, because this is a guy who could replace Denard Span within a year. So, the guy can play defense. The key is his hitting. He has to cut down on his strikeouts for sure. I'm looking at Emmanuel Burris. Emmanuel Burris is a guy that could really help the bench, not only with his speed, but his defense and his hitting. He had a great year with Syracuse last year, and because of that great year, he was invited to spring training. So I'm really looking out for him big time, and we'll see what happens.
Is there a spot for Burris? I mean, I guess he plays a lot of positions, but he seems like a middle infielder on a team with a whole lot of middle infielders.
Yeah, it could be a spot. I mean, Matthew, the last 2 years, the bench has been awful. I mean, I'm being kind when I say that. 144 last year. And, I think he would be an improvement if he can get on base often and do the things he's supposed to do. That's really the position where people have to look at the most. And that's the bench because it was terrible last year.
Bill Ladson, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Atlanta Braves with MLB.com's Braves beat reporter Mark Bowman. Mark, it's not often that a name change is the biggest news to come out of a camp, but your club managed that unusual feat this week with the change from B.J. Upton to Melvin Upton Jr. Not actually literally a legal name change, just what he's going by. Is there anything more to this than just it was time. It just seems like the timing is interesting, and he's kind of an interesting guy. Where does this come from?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. If he had hit 250, 260 with, you know, 20-plus homers over the last 2 years, we'd still be calling him DJ Upton. And in all honesty, it doesn't seem like everyone around the Braves camp, the coaches and the players have been around him forever. There's still a lot of people referring to him as DJ, and maybe that's just the natural thing, and it'll take some time. I thought Johnny Gomes, who has known him better than or longer than any of us here, you know, they played together here at the same stadium at the Braves train back in 2003 with the Orlando Rays. He says, so we used to call him Melvin just to get underneath his skin. You know, that was, there used to be a name that bothered him. So, you know, Melvin can say that this is the name that, you know, it's just something they wanted to do to honor his father and stuff. But I think we all know deep down this is just one of those ways, maybe from a mental perspective, to say, hey, look, it's a fresh new start. Try and turn the page and separate himself from the frustration that he's experienced during his first 2 years in Atlanta. And, you know, whatever it takes, you know, I'm not saying this is going to do the trick, but if that's what he wants to do, go ahead and see if it works.
Tony La Russa used to say you can always do something, and maybe taking it to an extreme extent, but you can always do something.
Yeah.
You had another piece of news here recently, a guy that if this team is going to contend, is going to be an important part of it, Nick Markakis. There have been some questions about how ready he would be. Sounds like as of now, the news is good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he came to camp today. This is, you know, came to camp Wednesday and basically said, you know, he's been cleared for all activities. Now, with that being said, he has not been able to run, do a lot of different things. It's going to take him, you know, some time to get his conditioning back to normal. And they'll ease him into things. I don't expect to see him during the first week of the Grapefruit League season and maybe the early portion of the second week. But, you know, as you know, I mean, spring training, the length of it is for pitchers. If he gets his 30-plus at-bats, which he can do over a span of a couple weeks, 40 at-bats, whatever it is, you know, he could be ready for opening day. Now, what he said this morning was, look, I'm not going to push it. I've had injuries in the past. I'm not going to try to put a definite timetable on this. We're just going to ease back into things. Freddy Gonzalez said that he expects him to be in the opening day lineup after easing into things here in spring training. So, you know, for now, things look like he will be ready and everything is on schedule. But at the same time, I think the next couple weeks, how he starts to feel once he gets into some of these more aggressive activities, we'll be able to tell exactly where he's going to be on April 6th there in Miami.
Even if he is ready, is there any question as to how much he'll be able to go early? In other words, is there some likelihood that he could be in the opening day roster but still need maintenance days, not be a full everyday guy early in the year? I mean, the stuff he's dealing with is not a typical sore ankle or something. It's a challenging deal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there because it's I don't think anyone can tell you definitely exactly where he's going to be here in 6 weeks when the season begins. They are all hoping that he's full go, and they'll continue to say that. But I think if we spoke 2 weeks from now, I may be able to tell you something a little bit different, and especially a month from now, you know, maybe 2 weeks before the regular season, we'll really have a good feel for where he might stand. But, you know, if he is limited in some ways, you know, let's just say, you know, something – where you know, it feels better for him to, you know, play one day and take a day off, play 2 days, take one day off. They do have some, they have some guys that could go over there and play right field. That Johnny Gomes could go play right field. You know, the attitude of the organization, where, you know, the reason they signed him is they see a guy that can get a majority of his at-bats against left-handed pitchers. Freddy Gonzalez continues to say it will not necessarily be a strict platoon in left field. If Gomes needed to go over there and play right, you know, on some days, they could do that. They've got Eric Young Jr., who, non-roster invitee, seems like a good fit there to get him a lot of at-bats in left field. primarily because of his speed. He's joining a club that really doesn't have a legitimate leadoff hitter. He's a guy that I can see getting most of the playing time there in left field, although, you know, Freddie continues to say that it won't necessarily be a strict platoon. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, Matt, you and I have been at this for about the same length of time. I've never been, and I, you know, the kind of successful clubs you were with the Cardinals there, I don't think you've probably ever been at camp where there are so many different pieces to this puzzle and how it could fit. You know, in terms of not only just the final roster spots, but the lineup. It's certainly going to be one of the more intriguing and entertaining spring training covered, because there's just so many different stories and storylines that can develop. And you know, everything in the baseball world, yesterday always affects the current day in some way, but truly throughout this camp, every twist and turn is going to affect so many different pieces of this club.
That seems particularly true in the pitching staff, and maybe doubly in the bullpen, where as we talked about, they brought in a whole ton of arms and kind of sort them out, which is often a real good way to build a bullpen. Nobody's pitching a game yet. Everybody looks good. You know, don't fall in love too early in spring training. But with that said, anybody popping the mitt or looking especially healthy or kind of catching eyes through these first couple of throws?
I think the most encouraging thing, like you said, you really can't be overwhelmed or get too excited about anything you see or hear. But Freddy Gonzalez, you know, saying that it looked like Jim Johnson had his sinker back the other day during a side session. That's the one pitch he, you know, relied on during his successful days there in Baltimore, and it's a pitch that deserted him last year. He seemed to lack confidence, not only because he wasn't comfortable in the new environments he was in with Oakland and Detroit. That pitch somewhat deserted him. Scouts said that he just wasn't throwing it with the same conviction. He's leaving it up in the zone. A flat sinker is nothing more than a BP fastball at the end of the day. So, you know, that was encouraging to hear that. Jason really seems to be healthy. If those two guys can work to, you know, get bounced back this year, along with Jose Varechet, you're right. This has the potential to be a pretty good bullpen. You know, just having three guys that, as recently as 2013, each of them had 20 saves that particular season. You know, have those three guys setting up for Craig Kimbrell. That's the foundation for a pretty good 10. And like you said, the way you build a good pitching staff is you basically throw a lot of arms out here in spring training, see what works, because guys are going to get hurt, some guys are going to disappoint, but if you have enough options, you know, you're going to be able to find the 12 guys that you want to head into the regular season with. And not only that, you're going to head into the season with 12 guys knowing that three or four of the guys that you sent down in the farm are going to be up at some point that year, you know, asked to play a somewhat influential role.
And then sort of the same question for the guys in the mix for a starting rotation. Anybody either caught your eye or maybe more importantly caught the eyes of people you've talked to from these first few days?
You know, I think Mike Minor was a big question mark heading into spring training. And I was, you know, you're hearing from different people. Some people saying, you know, I really don't know if he's even going to be full go. Mike kept telling us, hey, look, I'm fine. And I think that has probably been the most encouraging thing, is that now the team is saying, look, it looks like he's full go. The shoulder issues that he dealt with throughout last year, while that provided some concern to the club going into the winter, not knowing exactly where he would be here the second, third week of February, I think he's answered, you know, all the questions in a manner that they wanted him to so far. Now you just hope that once he gets into more of a regular schedule of, you know, pitching once or starting once every 5 days, throwing his side sessions, that shoulder does stay strong, because, you know, you put him in that mix with Shelby Miller, Julio Teheran, Alex Wood, it has the makings to be a pretty solid rotation. The fifth spot's going to be very interesting. I've been saying that Eric Stoltz and Mike Fultonevich are the top candidates. as things go along here, early days of camp, you've got to keep Juanny Rodriguez in that mix because we all know what he's done throughout his career. The question is, can he stay healthy? Time will tell. But if it gets down to Foltynewicz, Stoltz, Rodriguez, it's going to be interesting to see, how much John Hart, what he said yesterday or earlier this week, he said, if it's a close roster battle, we may go with the youth, the player that's going to be around this club longer. I'm not completely sure that that's the case with Foltynewicz because I think he really could use some more time in the minors developing. So if you're asking me who I think are truly the top two candidates, I think it's probably Stoltz and Wandy right now. Just because of the more I start talking to guys, the more I get the sense that Foltynewicz, it wouldn't hurt him to get a little more time. There has been some talk that maybe he and Benuelos go to the bullpen to start here. I just don't think that really benefits them either. Here's two guys, if you see them as long-term starters, I really don't think this they're the stage of their careers where it benefits you to have them compiling service time and just being a long guy in the pen. I'd rather see both of them at Aquinette just working on proving whether they deserve a shot to get to Atlanta to be a starter.
All right. Well, Mark Bowman, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Mets with MLB.com's Mets beat reporter, Anthony DiComo. Just going to go ahead and get right at it because we can't talk Mets without talking Matt Harvey.
Who?
And I don't know. Some guy throws a baseball or something. I hear he's already making people use funny words when he pitches.
Yes, he is. Perry Collins has a propensity for using funny words in general. But, Harvey's back and he's doing his thing. And you watch him throw his bullpen sessions and it's clear he's not going all out. He's not throwing 100%. He's not throwing 97 miles an hour. And yet you look at him compared to pretty much every other guy in camp with the exception of maybe a Zach Wheeler or a Noah Syndergaard, and he's just blowing them away in terms of sheer stuff. He looks like you would hope he would look at this time of year. He's certainly acting like it. Not that confidence has ever been an issue with Matt Harvey. And it's going to be really interesting to see once we get into Grapefruit League games, how that stuff plays. Is it as good as we see? Because sometimes it's hard to tell. And you look to see how hitters react, and just how he fares. It's going to be really interesting once this gets going to see how he does. Because by all indications, early in camp, Matt Harvey is Matt Harvey.
Is it likely at all that the biggest worry at some point will be not how fast he progresses, but kind of making sure he doesn't do too much? Or are they kind of past that point by now?
They're for all intents and purposes, past that point. Not that they're not going to worry about him and monitor him super carefully. They are. There's probably no one more important to the team this year than him. So they'll do that, and they'll check him every which way. But because he didn't come back in September and got that extra 6 months of rehab, all their studies have shown that it makes a huge difference coming back at 13, 14, 15 months post-surgery. Harvey will actually, by opening day, he'll be right around 17, I believe. Compared to 11, 12, it makes a big difference in terms of the recurrence of injuries, in terms of what these guys are capable of doing. So, they're watching him because he's Matt Harvey and they have to, but I don't think there's a huge concern right now that he's going to overdo it. From the Mets, beyond just the injury, the biggest concern for me will he get that command back? Because I know I've said it before on this podcast, the difference between Matt Harvey as a prospect, Matt Harvey in 2012, as a rookie, and what he did in 2013 was all of a sudden his ability to command his fastball, command his off-speed stuff, put it where he wants to, drop that walk rate. And, if he can't do that right away, which would not make him unique by any means among Tommy John patients, that could be the issue that prevents him from repeating his success.
Right, that's usually the thing that comes along a little later. The velocity is there, and that fine. It's not even the control; it's that command within the zone that tends to come a little later.
Exactly, and for him, I would say it's even a particular word because that's the one thing that sort of separated him from being a very good prospect, you know, type of guy who scouts thought could be a number three, maybe a number two, to all of a sudden being, you know, the quote-unquote dark knight of Gotham and the guy who took the city by storm. It was command. It really was nothing else because that velocity was always there. So it's going to be a big issue to see if he can harness that, you know, this soon after surgery.
And with his aggressiveness and with his willingness to say, here it is, hit it, that's almost magnified for him because he's not a guy who's going to nibble around the edges of the zone. He's the guy who's going to find a spot in the zone and say, good luck. And when you miss from a few inches from there, that's particularly treacherous.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly right. You know, if he's out there throwing 97, that's great. But if he's setting up on, you know, his catcher is setting up on the outside corner and that ball's leaking in and it's getting, you know, the middle third of the plate, guys are going to hit that. Guys are going to catch up. You know, this is the major leagues. And if he can spot 97 on the outside corner, on the inside corner, and same with his slider to a lesser extent, but if he can do that, he's going to get guys out. No one's going to be able to hit him. But big league hitters are going to be able to hit that if you put it in the middle of the zone or you know, if you put it in a spot where the scouting report says you shouldn't. So I can't stress enough how big a thing that is for him as we watch him progress. And it's something we'll be looking for in these Grapefruit League games just to get a hint of what might await Matt Harvey in April.
There has been a little bit of bad news early. We've got our first rib cage injury, which seems to be one of those spring training injuries that happened way too much. What's the status of Lucas Duda?
Well, it doesn't sound all that serious. You know, Lucas Duda sort of strained the left intercostal muscle taking swings. This was about a week ago. And, you know, he's been resting. He's been in the cage tracking pitches, but he hasn't been swinging. And because it's late February and not late March, it's not a concern at all. They'll back him off as much as they need to. What it does is it brings up an interesting conversation, and that's you've got all these guys who have gotten down here weeks, in Lucas Duda's case, really months in advance. You know, he owns a home down here now, as does David Wright, as does John Neese and a couple of other guys. And these guys are working out way more and way more aggressively than people are used to. So they get to camp in great shape, but I think we've seen as these rib cage injuries and some other sort of stress injuries have come about with more and more frequency, it might be playing a role in it. So the Mets are going to look at that very carefully. And while Lucas Duda's what's having him sidelined right now might not be a big deal, they're going to back some guys off this spring. They're not going to let David Wright or Daniel Murphy or even Duda get all the at-bats that maybe they might want this spring because they want them to be healthy in spring training. And, you know, these guys have been working out, doing baseball-related activities for months now, and spring training is just starting now, and it seems like they've been down here forever. So it's something to keep an eye on going forward.
You mentioned David Wright, who is, to me, one of the other sort of interesting stories right now. He's made some diet adjustments and some kind of lifestyle adjustments. How big a deal is that, do you think?
Well, everyone reacts to that type of stuff differently, so it's hard to tell. Is it going to make him all of a sudden go from a guy who has essentially missed 2 months of each year for, I believe, 3 of the last 4 years to a guy who plays 150 games consistently? You know, at age 32, that's probably a stretch. I just think this is about minimizing the risk. I think David Wright finally understands that he's not the kid he was when he was 25, 26. He's much more susceptible to injury, and every time you get injured, it seems to increase that chance. These aren't minor things that have happened to him in the past years. He had a stress fracture in his back. He blew out his hamstring pretty good because he played on, you know, what was a minor strain. He had a pretty significant shoulder injury that he probably could have had surgery on and chose not to. So these are major things that are the reasons why David Wright has been on the disabled list all this time over the past few years. I think he's finally starting to realize that maybe it's not just bad luck. You know, maybe it's a case of a player who's in, you know, entering his mid-30s, really, and it's a time when it gets hard to stay healthy. You don't see guys playing 162 games in their mid-30s And, you know, David Wright's a very strong-willed guy. He's never going to volunteer to sit out. And Terry Collins freely admits that he's probably going to have a fight on his hands when he wants to bench Wright, you know, give him a little bit of rest. But I think for the first time, all the parties involved are really understanding that it's not just a luxury, it's something they have to do if they want a full season of David Wright. And you know, it could change. You know, you get into a season, you get into a pennant race, and maybe that just takes over. And you know, David Wright wins that argument, but it sure sounds like they're going to be very careful within this season. In the goal of playing that 150 games as opposed to trying for 162 and winding up with 130.
You addressed a topic that we've talked about a while back in one of the stories on the site recently about the leadoff issue, and I thought it was a really interesting point of view because on the one hand, there's not really an obvious alternative if Lagares isn't the guy, and yet on the other hand, it's like they don't really want to decree that in case it doesn't work. Sometimes teams will do that with a closer. You don't officially name him so that you don't have to take it away from him. What's the talk a little more about the thought process on that, and also what is the alternative if it doesn't work? Is Curtis Granderson really an alternative? What do they do if it's not Juan Lagares?
Yeah, Curtis Granderson is plan B, and I'll answer that part of the question first, and the reason is simple. You know, Terry Collins likes what he did there last year. The numbers don't necessarily show it. He did struggle at times, but when Curtis Granderson first got into the leadoff spot last year, I believe Lagares was on the DL at the time, he had some homers early in games, the leadoff games. You know, he showed a bit of power, and it dropped off, so the final numbers weren't good, but I think that really intrigued Terry Collins, you know, as to what Granderson might be capable of at the leadoff spot. And Granderson, for his part, really doesn't care where he hits. He'll go first or second. He'll go sixth or seventh if that's what it needs to be. But as far as Lagares, you know, it is still the guy that they really want to win that leadoff spot. But Terry Collins is very cautious with this sort of thing. And the comparison that I drew, and I asked him about it, and he said I was dead right, was, you know, you look at a guy like Lucas Duda. And last year, Lucas Duda was in the midst of a career year, and Terry was still very hesitant to put him in the cleanup spot. And part of that was because Lucas Duda is a special case. You know, there have been confidence issues in his career, things like that, and he didn't want to overload him. He didn't want him to, you know, go 0 for 12 and all of a sudden drop down to the number 6 hole and think he's doing something wrong, start pressing, and so on and so forth. But, you know, it worked out in that case. Lucas Duda did great. He, you know, continued with that career year, and by the end of the year, he was in the cleanup spot every day. So I think they're sort of looking the same way with Juan Lagares. You know, if maybe he struggles this spring, they might not want to put him up there right away because they don't want to have to drop him down 2 weeks into the season if he's not producing and have that on his mind and have him thinking about that every time he steps into the batter's box. So, well, I still say Lagares is the favorite for the job, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't get it. There is some doubt in the manager's mind. There is some doubt, not that he can do it, because I think the jury is still out on that in a lot of ways, particularly with his ability to get on base. But just how he'll react if he fails at first, and it's something that the Mets are being cautious about.
All right. Well, Anthony Nocomo, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Miami Marlins with MLB.com's Joe Fusaro. Joe, I'm not sure any club has had the range of expectations and hype from top to bottom over the past few years that the Marlins have. This year, there's definitely some excitement. What's just kind of the vibe around camp during those first few days from a team that really has higher hopes than it's had in a few years?
A word that came to mind when I'm watching them go through drills, Matthew, is energy. I mean, there is just a lot of energy on this team. I mean, they're fun-loving guys. They're, you know, just the most simple of drills. Everyone's kind of excited. They go in, they put an effort. They're cheering each other on. They're ribbing each other. And, yeah, it's kind of this exciting new beginning. And yet again, we've heard it before here, obviously. This seems, as we've discussed in the past, a little more calculated, a little more measured in the process. But a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, and they're ready to go.
Mike Redmond is still a relatively young manager. As you have kind of seen him come along from when he started managing this club, do you see any difference in how he runs a camp from maybe 2 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's just natural. I mean, when he took over in 13, they, of course, you know, were 20-something rookies. So there was a lot of instruction, a lot of, teaching. And as much as, he was coming over from being a Class A level manager in the Blue Jay system. So a lot more fundamentals. And then now with a little more veteran squad, they're not in the field as long these first few days. And not, the guys, the Martin Prados didn't need too much. They know what to do. The Michael Morrises, they get their work done. They get in, they get out, and they get it moving. But that is something, to see how he grows along with his team is certainly something we're going to keep an eye on.
Giancarlo Stanton is not new that he's a star, and it's not new that he's somebody people want to talk about. But between his contract, him putting together such a full, remarkable season last year, his injury, the rise of the team, it seems that he is more in the spotlight than ever before. He's already there. He's already talked. How do you see him sort of handling or embracing the even presumably higher level of expectations and attention and fame that seems to be coming his way this spring?
Yeah, I mean, he's learning to say no. I mean, he's always been a focused guy. He's always been very business when he's on the field anyway. But, there's a lot of people tugging on him. There are a lot of people wanting a part of him. And let's face it, it's a concerted effort of Major League Baseball. Commissioner Manfred made it clear they are going to market players more in this sport. And this is a very marketable guy. I mean, this guy is in the fashion world. He's going to be in the entertainment world at some point. And he's certainly at the height in the center of the sports world in this sport we're in. So he's, still the same Giancarlo, but a little bit more approach with care and, until he gets his feet wet, and we get things rolling. But it seems like when there's time to work, it's time to work. And he's just managing his time a lot more closely.
With the injuries he had and the surgery he had, is there anything different at all about his program in the early days of camp?
I haven't seen it. I've just seen, he goes out, he's aggressive in batting practice. He's doing the drills. I'm curious to see once we start playing, if he will do something as simple as, diving for balls, maybe, how that would be, a head first dive, anything that could expose his face, head first slides. Not that he did a lot of that anyway, but will he be more feet first? There are certain things for when he has to come into contact, either with the ground or another player, or that something to monitor. But, he looks good. I mean, he's in really, really good shape. And, it's not like he got his big paycheck and then, just kind of kicked back a little bit. He seems ready to want to take his game to the next level and be all that everyone's expecting him to be.
What's the club's hope in that regard? Would they like to see him again? It's not like he's a Harper type who's running through walls or anything. But do they hope he maybe takes a little off the gas this spring, or do they just have the philosophy that you got to play, so you play?
Well, last year, one of his goals, because of injuries the years before, where he missed so much time in 12 and 13, 14, he wanted to play in all 162, and he made that clear, and he was in game 145 when he got hit in the face. So Ichiro being here is going to be real interesting, because Mike Redmond talked today about, the possibility, let's say Stanton wants to go all 162. He said he's going to have that conversation with him and say, look, we got Ichiro around. We got some players here. Take a day or two. Take this day off. It looks like you're, needing the day because your body just isn't up to it today or whatever. So in that regard, yes, I see them monitoring him. And that goes with the other two guys in the outfield, Yelich and Ozuna. But Stanton is obviously someone you need to keep on the field. That is a big body. I mean, he's 250 pounds on 6'5 and a half frame, and that's a big man, and as well conditioned as he is, the sport, with the weather changes and the rain conditions in certain parts, you got to be careful with the legs more than anything.
In these early first couple of days of guys being there, what do you see from Ichiro? I just got to think he's a fun guy to watch even in camp.
Oh, no question. He probably is the story of camp in terms of the excitement. Obviously, the large number of Japanese media here to see him, and just the people that around this organization who have always admired Ichiro but never really got to see him much. So he is kind of a sensation in his own right. And it's funny watching, because he and Stanton hit in the same group these first 2 days, and they come off the field and the crowd is kind of mixed. They're, you know, like today, I didn't even see Stanton had passed by because the Ichiro crowd was so big. The next thing I know, Stanton was already back to the clubhouse, and he was behind him to start with. So very fascinating to have those two. I mean, it's again, we're going to get to the playing time issue and how to keep him happy. But, yeah, he is exciting to see him take BP and just to see the way people look at him taking BP. D. Gordon, a quick story there, he had a funny line because so many that shutter, the photographer shutter speeds are going off every time this guy moves. And D, like, mentioned him and said, you must be hearing that in your sleep. And then there was a moment yesterday when they're walking up the field, someone wanted to fund. Ichiro is also very businesslike. As he's walking, he doesn't necessarily sign until he's done. And someone goes, Ichiro, can I take a selfie with you? And he goes, no, I'm sorry, not right now. But then he goes, but I'm very photogenic. And he would know. I mean, this guy gets his picture taken seemingly the moment he steps out of the house in the morning. So it's a celebrity-type environment that we haven't had here in a long time, if ever.
And has Jose Fernandez thrown yet that anybody's been able to see?
Oh, yeah. I see him on flat ground. I think March 1st. They're not saying it specifically, but that's a day I had heard. Obviously, it's subject to change because there's no reason it needs to not be subject to change. He threw flat ground yesterday, and he looked strong. He had pushed out to 100, 180 or so feet. And then he'd take it in and get about 60 feet and, you know, just kind of simulate throwing to a guy who would squat and catch. And he just looks really strong physically. He looks a lot stronger than he did last year at this time. That is going to be a guy they're going to have to probably pull the reins on. You know, they're going to have to really closely monitor because he was throwing and, you know, it was one of those, hey, I got 10 more throws in me. And then he went and did a towel drill off the mound. And it's the first time I saw him on the mound, but he obviously wasn't throwing the ball. He was simulating throwing with the towel. And, he's a guy that's throwing. He seems to be every other day doing that type of stuff.
Just about to ask, is there any worry as far as keeping him from getting ahead too much?
There's going to be because he is who he is, but they have the doctor will just walk off the field. I mean, Chuck Hernandez, a pitching coach, took his glove away from him, you know, yesterday. You know, they're little subtle, funny things they do like that. Okay, you know, you want to throw? Okay, hey, I don't have a glove, you know, that type of stuff. So, it's fun. I mean, you obviously want a guy that's eager to do it, but this is a very special arm, and they're going to have to be very careful with it.
All right. Well, Joe Fusaro, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Philadelphia Phillies with MLB.com's Phillies beat reporter, Todd Zielecki. Todd, you had an awfully newsworthy stretch of opening camp here. I'm not sure who to start with, but I think it needs to start with Cole Hamels, who is the best player on this team, the most important player on this team, and the one guy that they're probably least eager to deal unless they could really get a lot for him. And he had some interesting comments, and the club talked about them, and then he talked. What's really the situation as far as what he wants and what he expects with the trade market and with his future with the Phillies?
Here's what I think is going on with Cole Hamels. You know, he's told USA Today last week that, you know, I want to win, and I know it's not going to happen here. And those are pretty. It's a pretty harsh assessment of the Phillies' situation. Not untrue by any means, but harsh coming from a player that's kind of come up through the system. So he kind of backed away from those comments last week, but he didn't deny saying them either. And I think what's going on is this. I think if you would pull Cole Hamels aside and say, hey, listen, you can go to the Red Sox tomorrow and have a chance to win a World Series, I think he would jump at the opportunity. But he also appreciates the fact that the Phillies drafted him. He won a World Series here, like I said, 5 straight division titles, and they gave him a $144 million contract extension. And for all those reasons, he doesn't want to kind of dump on everybody if he is indeed on his way out. So I think he's putting on a good face right now. I think he's kind of accepted the fact that he's in camp. He's with his team. He doesn't know how long it's going to be, but if he is here through July 31st, if he's here the entire season, if he's here the next 2 seasons or whatever, however long he's here, he wants to try to make the best of it. So at least at this moment, he just kind of wants to say the right things. And I think he does appreciate the fan base. He doesn't want to kind of come off as being unappreciative or ungrateful or any of those things. So I think you're going to, for the moment, who knows what it's going to be like during the season, but for the moment, I think you're going to see Cole Hamels say, hey, you know what, I'm okay being here, and let's try to make the best of the situation.
Chase Utley seemed to say some kind of similar things, which is only noteworthy in that Utley has seemed, from the outside, to be the one of this group of guys who was least likely to go. And now it seems like, I don't want to say he changed his tune, but am I right to read that as he sounded maybe a little more open if they were to approach him about a deal than he might have been a year ago or 6 months ago?
Yeah, definitely. He definitely said that, last season he basically said, I don't really want to go anywhere. I like Philly. I think we're going to win. But then everything changed in the offseason. The Phillies made it very clear they're rebuilding. And so what Chase said is a little bit different in the sense that he said, I respect the organization. I would love to stay here. I like playing here. But if they would come to me and say, hey, you know, we have a trade on the table, I'm willing to listen. And then the other thing that he said, which I thought was interesting, was he said if they trade Hamels and Lee and Papelbon and Ryan Howard and those guys, then certainly my feelings on this could change even more. So he's definitely leaving the door open, which is a lot more than I think he has said in the past.
The other guy that probably has some value, potentially at least has some value, is Cliff Lee. He seems to be starting to come along. Where is he at in his throwing program, and how does that kind of look?
Entering camp, it sounded like he could be a little bit behind, maybe just a little bit. He's just through live batting practice on Wednesday, and it seemed to go pretty well, and he seemed to be pretty upbeat about it. Now, they said that he might be just a tad behind schedule, not because of his elbow, they said, because he had this bronchitis, upper respiratory issue that kind of shut him down for a little bit in January. So they said other than that, you know, he seems to be ready to go. And the fact that he threw a live BP, they just started throwing live BP this week. So if he is behind schedule, it certainly doesn't seem to be very far behind schedule. They said that they've kicked around the idea of maybe having him miss his first turn in the Grapefruit League action, but then throwing it in after that. So maybe one start behind, but as long as he feels healthy, I think you're going to see a lot of scouts at Cliff Lee Grapefruit League games this spring in Florida, because if he is healthy, certainly he's an attractive piece, and I think a lot of teams would like to have him because he's proven, you know, when he's on, he's very successful. He's had success in the American League, certainly, and I think that's attractive to a lot of teams.
And if he were approached, would he be open to a move?
Absolutely. I think all of these guys that we've been talking about, Hamels, more so Hamels, Lee, Papelbon, than maybe Utley. Utley, I think you'd have to be convinced. You'd have to do it a little bit more convincing. I think the three pitchers I just mentioned, they would very much welcome an opportunity to go play for a winning team. Cliff has kind of indicated in the past that, I kind of came to win, and if we're not going to win, I'd like to go somewhere where I can win. And much like Cole, he's kind of like, he's kind of backed off those little things a little bit. He doesn't want to come off as being ungrateful to the fan base or unappreciative of the $120 million contract they gave. But yeah, I definitely think that he would welcome a trade if given the opportunity.
So you're a young manager, and all of the questions in the first week are about, is this guy going to get traded? Is this guy going to get traded? Is this guy going to get traded? The front office says, we're probably not competing for a couple of years. How exactly does a manager handle that? What are you seeing from Ryan Sandberg as he tries to make sure this group of guys gives its best and competes to win ball games every day?
He tried to relay that in the message yesterday before the first full squad workout on Tuesday, and quite frankly, Ruben Amaro Jr. tried to relay that message maybe even a little bit stronger on Tuesday before the first full squad workout. They said, listen, we knew a lot of stuff was said in the offseason about our plan to rebuild in 2017 and 2018, but we're all here now, and there's no sense in, you know, we got to pull together and put our best foot forward, and just because we're in this state of transition does not mean we're not going to try to win ball games. We're going to try to win every game we possibly can. It might not be easy, but the effort is going to be there. So Rhino has tried to kind of put that tone into camp. He's really stressed fundamentals. They've had really long workouts. The first two full squad days, 3.5 hours, which is a lot longer than I can remember, at least in recent years. So he's really trying to put an emphasis on running the base the right way, situational hitting, all those little things that a team, kind of a young up-and-coming team, needs to do correctly to give themselves a shot. Because it's going to be hard to score runs from this year, so if they can take an extra base here or there, maybe they could steal a couple more wins they might not normally have gotten. But that is definitely his way of kind of motivating these guys and saying, yeah, we're in transition, but hey, I still want to win as many games as possible, and I hope you guys do too.
I was intrigued by the addition of Charlie Manuel to the camp roster. I mean, you know better than I can think of very, very few guys have more to offer about hitting, who love talking hitting more, who think about hitting more, who I'd rather have around hitters, especially young hitters, than Charlie Manuel. What kind of value do you think he can have being around there to talk hitting with that guys?
I think he has a lot of value in this camp. He's got a great reputation. And, you know, I did hear some players, you know, it's kind of through the grapevine saying, I kind of missed Charlie over the past couple of seasons. Jim Comey tells it better than anybody else. He was a decent prospect in the Indian system coming up, but he didn't really have a lot of confidence in himself. And Charlie Manuel was a genius in terms of he just makes people feel good about themselves. Jason Worth talks about this a lot. He just kind of, when you see Charlie, you kind of get pumped up a little bit, and Charlie will just basically tell you can hit. He kind of makes you believe in yourself a little bit, and so I don't think it's any surprise, even though the Phillies might say it was just kind of random chance, that he's working with Ryan Howard this spring, he's working with Jeff Francoeur this spring. These are two guys that I think could use a guy like Charlie. Charlie has said in the past he said for years, for whatever reason, he really wanted to have an opportunity at some point in his career to work with Jeff Francoeur. Well, now he's got a shot, so it'll be interesting to see how he does. And a guy like Howard, who's really taken a beating, I think, mentally, confidence-wise, over the past few seasons, if you're going to have a guy to kind of coach your swing, but also kind of build your self-esteem or build yourself confidence, I should say, Charlie Manuel's a great guy to do it. Because even as a beat writer, you know, you see Charlie walk by, you start feeling better about yourself. For whatever reason, he kind of has that aura about him where you just feel good, and I think a lot of hitting is feeling good. Obviously, you need talent, but, you know, a lot of hitting is feeling good and being confident in yourself, and you really can drive that home and make you start feeling that way.
All right. Well, Todd Zielecki, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.